Do they think the Cellier boy is sincere?
Marcel is a good boy.
He lied.
It's possible.
I wonder why.
Perhaps because he thought they were going to accuse his father.
Don't forget his mother is the old Biard woman's niece, and she'll be the heir. I thought the postmistress had always claimed that her niece would not get a thing. The doctor looked a touch uneasy. His sister brought in the appetizers. Were you at the funeral? Maigret asked her.
Armand never goes to funerals.
They began to eat in silence. It was Maigret who first spoke again, as if talking to himself. It was not Tuesday but Monday that Marcel Cellier saw the teacher leave the tool shed.
He has admitted it?
I haven't asked him yet, but I'm almost certain of it. On Monday before school, Gaston worked in his garden. When he crossed the courtyard sometime that morning, he noticed a hoe lying around and went to put it away. On Tuesday evening, after the discovery of the body, Marcel said nothing and was not yet thinking of accusing his teacher. Later, he had an idea or overheard something in conversation that made up his mind to it. He did not lie completely. Women and children specialize in these half-lies. He didn't make anything up, simply moved a real event one day later.
That's rather funny.
I would bet he's trying to persuade himself that it really was Tuesday when he saw the teacher come out of the shed. He can't manage it, obviously, so he must have gone to confession.
Well, why don't you ask the priest?
Because if he were to answer me, it would indirectly betray the secrets of the confessional. The priest won't do that. I was thinking of asking the neighbors, the people in the cooperative, among others, if they'd seen Marcel enter the church at a time when there was no service. But now I know that he goes there through the courtyard. The leg of lamb was perfection, and the beans meltingly tender. The doctor had brought out a vintage bottle. Outside, they could hear a muffled noise, the sound of conversation on the square and in the courtyard of the inn. Did the doctor realize that Maigret was only talking to try out his ideas on an audience? He was circling around the same subject, lazily, without ever getting to the essential point. In the end, I don't think Marcel lied to deflect any suspicion from his father. The inspector had the feeling at that moment that Bressel knew more than he wanted to say.
Really?
I'm trying, you see, to put myself in the place of the children. Since the beginning, I've had the impression that it's all about the children, and the grown-ups have become involved in it only by accident. Looking the doctor full in the face, he added calmly, pointedly, "And I believe more and more that others know this as well."
"Oh, perhaps in that case you will succeed in making them talk."
"Perhaps." "It's difficult, isn't it?"
"Very."
Bressel was making fun of him, still in the same way as the deputy mayor did. "I had this morning a long conversation with a Gaston boy."
"Did you go to their house?"
"No, I spotted him watching the funeral over the cemetery wall and followed him all the way to the sea."
"Why was he going there?"
"He was running away from me. At the same time, he was hoping I would catch him."
"What did he tell you?"
"That Marcel Cellier was standing not at the left-hand window, but at the one on the right. At most, Marcel could have seen Leonie Biard fall at the moment the bullet entered her eye, but he could not possibly have seen the teacher coming out of the shed."
"What do you conclude?"
"That it was to shield someone that the Cellier boy decided to lie, not right away. He took his time. The idea probably did not occur to him immediately."
"Why did he pick the teacher?"
"First, because he was the most likely person, and also, as it happened, because he had seen him the day before, almost at the same time, coming out of a shed. Finally, perhaps because of Jean-Paul."
"Do you think he hates him?"
"Mind you, Doctor, I'm not affirming anything. I'm feeling my way. I've questioned the two children. This morning I watched some old men who were once children as well, in this very place. If the inhabitants of a village are so easily hostile to strangers, isn't it because, without their knowing it, they envy them? They spend their entire existence in Saint-André, with the occasional trip to La Rochelle, or the distraction of a wedding or a funeral."
"I see what you're driving at."
"The teacher comes from Paris. In their eyes, he's a learned man who busies himself with their personal doings and intrudes on them with his advice. For a child, the teacher's son has a little of the same prestige.
Marcel lied because he hates Jean-Paul?
Partly because he envies him. The strangest thing is that for his part, Jean-Paul envies Marcel and his friends. He feels alone, different from the others, kept at a distance by them.
Nevertheless, someone shot at the old Birard woman, and it couldn't have been either of those two boys.
That's right. A homemade apple tart arrived, and the smell of coffee wafted in from the kitchen. I'm beginning to feel that Theo knows the truth.
Because he was in his garden.
For that and other reasons. Yesterday evening, Doctor, you told me gaily that they're all a bunch of crooks.
I was joking.
Half joking, isn't that so? They all cheat, more or less, committing what you would call nasty little tricks. You have your blunt manner, you scold them on occasion, but in reality you would not betray them. Am I right?
The priest, according to you, would refuse to answer you if you were to question him about Marcel, and I think you're right. Me? I'm a doctor. It's somewhat the same thing. Do you know, Inspector, that our lunch is beginning to resemble an interrogation? What do you prefer with your coffee, brandy or Calvados?
Calvados. Marcel went to fetch the bottle from an antique cabinet and filled the glasses, still pleasant and cheerful, but with a slightly more serious look in his eyes.
Your health?
I would like to talk to you about the accident, began Maigret almost timidly.
What accident?
The doctor's question was simply to give himself time to think, for accidents were not that frequent in the village. The motorbike accident.
Has someone told you about it?
I know only that Marcelin's son was knocked down by a motorbike. When did it happen?
Oh, a little more than a month ago, on a Saturday.
Near Léonie Birard's house?
Not far from it, maybe 100 meters away.
During the evening?
A bit before dinner. It was dark. The two boys.
Which boys?
Marcel and Joseph, Marcelin's son.
Just the two of them?
Yes. They were going home. A motorbike was coming from the seashore. No one knows exactly how it happened.
Who was the motorcyclist?
Hervé Jousseau, a mussel farmer of about 30 who got married last year.
He'd been drinking?
He doesn't drink. He was raised by his aunts, who are quite strict and who still live with the family.
Was his headlamp on?
The investigation showed that it was. The children must have been playing. Joseph tried to cross the road and was knocked down.
Was his leg broken?
In two places.
Will he limp?
No, in a week or two it'll be like new.
He still can't walk, yet?
No.
Does the accident bring in something for Marcelin?
The insurance will pay a certain sum, because Jousseau admitted that he was probably at fault.
Do you think that he was? Visibly uncomfortable, the doctor decided to burst out laughing.
I'm beginning to understand what you call a quai des affaires. Sweating a witness. I would rather fess up. Isn't that how you put it?
He refilled the glasses.
Marcelin is a poor wretch. Everyone knows he's not going to last much longer. We can't hold it against him that he drinks, because he's never had any luck. Not only has there always been illness in his house, but everything he tries goes wrong. 3 years ago, he rented some meadows to fatten bullocks, and a drought took everything. He's always hard up. His van spends more time broken down by the roadside than it does delivering meat.
So, Jousseau, who has nothing to lose since the insurance is paying, said he was at fault.
That's about it.
Does everyone know this?
More or less. An insurance company is a vague and distant entity, like the government, and it always seems only right to take money from it.
Did you draw up the medical certificates?
Of course.
Did you formulate them in such a way that Marcelin would receive as much as possible?
Oh, let's say that I emphasized the complications that might arise.
There weren't any complications.
There could have been. When a cow dies of a sudden sickness, 5 times out of 10 the veterinarian writes it up as an accident.
It was Maigret's turn to smile. If I understand correctly, Marcelin's son could have been back on his feet a week or two ago.
1 week.
By keeping him in a cast, you're allowing his father to claim a larger sum from the insurance company.
You see that even a doctor is obliged to be a bit crooked. If I'd refused, I would have been long gone from here. And the teacher is clearly in prison today because he refused to provide such certifications. If he'd been more flexible, If he hadn't fought 100 times with Teo over his being too generous with government money, they might have adopted him in the end.
In spite of what happened to his wife?
Oh, they've all been cheated on, too.
Was Marcel Cellier the only witness to the accident?
I told you it was in the evening. There was no one else on the road.
Could someone have seen them from a window?
You're thinking of the old Pirard woman.
I assume that she wasn't always in her kitchen and that she sometimes went into the front room.
She never came up in the investigation. She didn't say anything.
The doctor scratched his head, completely serious this time.
I have the feeling you're closing in on where you're going. Mind you, I'm not following you yet.
You're sure of that?
Of what?
Why did Marcelin try to rush at me this morning?
He was drunk.
Why come after me, in particular?
You were the only stranger at the inn. When he's been drinking, he feels persecuted. From there to imagining that you're here only to spy on him.
You went to some trouble to calm him down.
You would have preferred a fight?
Teo knocked him out by making him drink a double or triple Pernod and carried him upstairs. That's the first time I've seen the deputy mayor ride to the rescue.
Marcelin is his cousin.
I'd rather he'd been allowed to tell me what he wanted to say. The others had clearly not wanted him to speak, had whisked him away, in effect, and now the butcher must have been sleeping it off in one of the upstairs bedrooms.
I'm going to have to go to my surgery, said Brussel. I've probably got a good dozen people waiting for me.
The two rooms of his office were in a low building in the courtyard. Patients could be seen sitting there in a row against a wall, including a child with a bandaged head and an old man with crutches.
I think you'll get somewhere,
said the little doctor with a sigh, alluding to Maigret's investigation, of course, not his career. He considered the inspector now with a certain respect, but also with a hint of irritation.
Would you have preferred that I find nothing?
I wonder. It might have been better if you'd never come.
That depends on what there is at the end. You haven't the slightest idea about that.
I know about as much as you do.
And you would have left Gaston in prison?
In any case, they can't keep him very long.
Brussel was not a local man. He'd been born in a city, like the teacher. But for more than 20 years he'd been living with the village, and in spite of himself, he felt a part of it.
Come see me when you feel like it. Believe me, I do what I can. It simply happens that I would rather live here and spend most of my days on the local roads than shut myself up in a consulting room in a city or some suburb.
Thank you for the lunch.
Will you question young Marcel again?
I don't know yet.
If you want to talk to him, it would be better if you saw him without his father present.
Is he afraid of his father?
I don't think that it's fear. Admiration, rather. If he lied, he must be living in terror.
Back outside, Maigret found only a few groups left in the square and at the Bon Coin.
Teo was playing cards in a corner, as on other days, with the postman, the blacksmith, and a farmer. His eyes met Maigret's, and although as mocking as before, they were beginning to reflect a certain respect.
"Is Marcelin still upstairs?" the inspector asked Therese.
"He's snoring. He soiled the entire room. He can't hold his drink any more. It's the same thing every time."
"Has anyone asked for me?"
"The lieutenant came by a little while ago. He didn't come in, only glanced inside as if looking for someone. Maybe you. Are you having anything?"
"No, thanks."
Even the smell of wine was nauseating. He headed slowly for the village hall. One of the sergeants was talking with Lieutenant Danielu.
"Did you try to see me?"
"Not particularly. I went through the square a while ago and looked to see if you're at the inn."
"Anything new?"
"It might not be important. Sergeant Newley has found another rifle."
"A .22 caliber?"
"Yes, here it is. It's the same type as the others."
"Where was it?"
"In the shed behind the butcher's house."
"Hidden?"
The sergeant replied himself. "I was still busy looking for the spent cartridge with my colleague. We were going from one garden to the next. I saw the door of a shed open with bloodstains everywhere. In a corner I spotted the rifle."
"Did you question the butcher's wife?"
"Yes. She told me that when Cellier beat the town drum to ask that all rifles be brought to the village hall, she hadn't thought of her son's rifle, given that he was laid up in bed. He had an accident about a month ago, and—"
"I know."
Maigret, holding the weapon, was taking little puffs on his pipe. He finally placed the rifle in a separate corner from the others.
Would you come with me for a moment, Lieutenant?
They crossed the courtyard, pushed open the door of the classroom, which smelled of chalk and ink.
Keep in mind that I don't know yet where this will take us. On Tuesday morning, when the teacher left here with the farmer Piedbeuf, Marcel Cellier went to this window.
That's what he told us.
We can see, to the right of the linden, the tool shed. We can also see some windows, including those on the first floor of the butcher's house. Frowning slightly, the lieutenant listened. The boy did not stay here. Before the teacher left the village hall office, the boy crossed the classroom.
Maigret did so as well, passing in front of the blackboard, the teacher's desk, heading for the window directly opposite the first one.
From here, as you can confirm, we see Léonie Birard's house. If she was standing at her window and she was hit, as the inquiry seemed to indicate, it is possible that Marcel saw her fall.
Do you suppose he had a reason for going from one window to the other?
He might have seen something and...
Not necessarily. Why did he lie?
Maigret preferred not to answer.
Do you have your suspicions?
I think so.
What are you going to do?
What there is to do, replied Maigret flatly.
He sighed, emptied his pipe on the greyish floor, looked at the ashes there with an air of reluctance, and added as if with regret,
It's not going to be pleasant.
Directly across the courtyard from a window on the first floor, Jean-Paul was watching them. Chapter 8. Léonie's Horseshoe. Before leaving the classroom, Maigret saw another form at a window, an open one this time, further away beyond the gardens. The person sitting on the windowsill had his back turned, but from the shape of his head and his sturdy build, Maigret recognized Marcel Cellier.
I suppose that's the butcher's house.
Yes. Joseph the son and Marcel are great friends. Across the way, the boy twisted around on the sill, then looked down to watch a woman hanging laundry out to dry in a garden. He glanced automatically about the yard just at the moment when Maigret and the lieutenant were leaving the classroom and facing his way. In spite of the distance, one could tell from his movements that he was talking to someone in the room. He then got down off the windowsill and disappeared. Turning towards the inspector, Danielou murmured pensively, Good luck.
Are you returning to La Rochelle? Would you prefer that I wait for you? That might allow me to take the evening train.
He had no more than 150 meters to cross. He did so in long, even strides. The butcher's shop was a low, huddled house. There was no real shop. It was the left-hand room on the ground floor, which had been adapted by adding a strange sort of counter with a scale, an old model icebox, and a table for cutting meat. The front door opened to a hallway, the end of which, to the left of the staircase, opened onto the courtyard. Before knocking, Maigret had passed the right-hand window, the one in the kitchen. It was open, showing three women, including an elderly lady in a white bonnet, sitting at a round table eating some pie. One of them must have been Marcelin's wife, the other two her mother and sister, who lived in the neighbouring village, and had come for the funeral. They had seen him pass by. The windows were so small that he had blocked theirs for a moment with his burly torso. They heard him hesitating at the open door, looking for a bell, not finding one and taking two steps inside, making noise on purpose. The butcher's wife rose, half opened the kitchen door and asked, What is it? Then, probably recognizing him from seeing him around the village, You're the policeman from Paris, aren't you? If she had gone to the funeral, she'd already changed her clothes. She couldn't have been very old. Yet her shoulders were bowed, her cheeks hollow, and her eyes feverish. My husband isn't here, she added without looking him in the face. I don't know when he'll be back. Were you wanting to see him? She did not invite him into the kitchen, where the other two women sat in silence.
I would like a word with your son.
She was afraid, but that meant nothing, for she was a woman who must always have been afraid, who lived in the expectation of catastrophe.
He's in bed.
I know.
He's been upstairs for more than a month.
May I go up?
What could she do? She let him pass without daring to protest, clutching a corner of her apron. He had climbed only 4 or 5 steps when he saw Marcel coming down the same stairs, and it was Maigret who now pressed back against the wall.
Excuse me?
Stammered the boy, who also avoided looking straight at him. He was hurrying to get outside, must have expected Maigret to stop him on his way or call him back. But the inspector did not, and went on upstairs.
The door to the right,
the mother told him when he reached the landing. He knocked.
Come in,
said a child's voice. The mother stayed there, motionless, her face lifted towards him as he pushed open the door and closed it behind him.
Don't bother.
Sitting on his bed, propped up by several pillows, one leg in plaster up to mid-thigh, Joseph had moved as if to get up.
I passed your friend on the stairs.
I know.
Why didn't he wait for me?
The ceiling was low, and Maigret almost touched the main beam with his head. The room was not large. The bed took up most of it. The place was untidy, littered with illustrated magazines and bits of wood carved with a pocket knife.
Bored, are you?
There was a chair, but it was heaped with various things, a jacket, a slingshot, two or three books, and more pieces of wood.
You can take everything off it, said the boy.
Jean-Paul Gaston resembled his father and mother. Marcel resembled the tinsmith. Joseph, though, looked neither like the butcher nor his wife. Of the three children, he was without question the handsomest, the one who seemed most like a healthy, well-adjusted child. Maigret had gone to sit on the windowsill, his back to the landscape of courtyards and gardens, in the place where Marcel had recently been sitting, and he was in no hurry to talk. This was not, as so often happened with him at Quai des Orfèvres, intended to unnerve another person, but because he had no idea where to begin. Joseph spoke first.
Where's my father?
At Louis's place. The child hesitated before his next question.
How is he?
What point was there in hiding what he must certainly have known?
Théo put him to bed.
Instead of worried, he seemed comforted by the news.
Is my mother downstairs with my grandmother?
Yes.
The sun, setting in a still clear sky, gently warmed the inspector's back, and birdsong rose from the gardens. Somewhere, a child was playing a tin trumpet.
Don't you want me to take off your plaster cast?
It was as if Joseph expected that, understanding the implication. He was not worried, like his mother. He did not seem afraid. Studying the bulky form of his visitor and his seemingly impassive face, he thought about what tact take.
You know about that?
Yes.
The doctor told you?
I'd guessed earlier. What were you doing, you and Marcel, when the motorbike hit you?
Joseph was truly relieved.
Didn't you find the horseshoe?
He asked. And those words brought an image to Maigret's mind. He'd seen a horseshoe somewhere. It was when he'd visited Léonie Birat's house. The rusty horseshoe had been lying on the floor, in the corner to the right of the window, not far from the chalk lines marking the position of the body. It hadn't escaped him. He had even almost asked a question. Then, straightening up, he had noticed a nail. Had told himself that the shoe had probably been hanging up on this nail. Lots of people out in the country keep a horseshoe they found on the road as a good luck charm. Danielu and the gendarme, who had already examined the premises, must have thought the same thing.
There is indeed a horseshoe in Léonie Birat's place, he replied.
I'm the one who found it, said the boy, the night of the accident. I was on the sea road with Marcel when I tripped over it. It was dark. I took the horseshoe with me. We were passing the old lady's house, and I had it in my hand. The window on the street side was open. We went over without making any noise.
Was the postmistress in the front room?
In the kitchen. The door was ajar.
He could not keep from smiling.
First, I had the idea of throwing the horseshoe into the house to scare her.
The way you used to throw in dead cats and other filth.
I'm not the only one who did that.
You changed your mind?
Yes. I thought it would be funnier to sneak the horseshoe into her bed. I climbed quietly through the window, took a few steps. Unfortunately, I bumped into something, I don't know what. She heard. I dropped the horseshoe and jumped out of the window.
Where was Marcel?
He was waiting a little further along. I started to run. I heard the old woman shouting threats from her window. And that's when the motorbike hit me.
Why didn't you say so?
First off, they took me to the doctor and it hurt a lot. They gave me some medicine that put me to sleep. When I woke up, my father was there and the first thing they talked about was the insurance. I understood that if I told the truth, people would say it was my fault and the insurance wouldn't pay. My father needs money.
Marcel came to see you.
Yes, I made him promise not to say anything either.
Since then, he's been by to see you every day?
Almost every day. He's my friend.
Jean-Paul isn't your friend.
He isn't anyone's friend.
Why?
I don't know. He probably doesn't want it. He's like his mother. His mother never speaks to the women in the village.
Aren't you bored alone in this bedroom for a month?
Yes.
What do you do all day?
Nothing. I read, I whittle pieces of wood and make little boats and people out of them.
There were dozens of them all around him, some rather carefully done. Do you ever go over to the window?
I'm not supposed to.
For fear people would find out you can walk.
Yes, he replied frankly. Then he asked, are you going to tell the insurance company?
That's none of my business.
There was a silence, during which Maigret turned around to look at the schoolyard and the backs of the houses.
I suppose that it's especially during playtime that you look out of the window.
Often.
Exactly opposite, beyond the little gardens, he could see the windows of Léonie Birard.
Did the postmistress happen to see you?
Yes.
The child became more subdued now, still hesitating a bit, but knew already that he would have to talk.
Already before, when she saw me, she would make faces at me.
Did she stick out her tongue at you?
Yes. After the accident, she began taunting me, showing me the horseshoe.
Why?
Probably to make me understand that she could go and tell everything.
Yet she did not do that.
No.
It was a little as if the former postmistress had been the same age as the youngsters with whom she used to squabble, and who had targeted her for their teasing. She would shout, threaten, stick out her tongue at them. At a distance, she was reminding Joseph that she could cause trouble for him.
Did that scare you?
Yes. My parents need money.
Do they know about the business with the horseshoe?
My father does.
You told him about it?
He guessed that I'd done something that I wasn't telling him, and made me admit the truth.
Did he scold you?
He advised me to keep quiet.
How many times did Léonie Birard show you the horseshoe in the window?
Maybe 20 times. She did it whenever she saw me.
As he had done in the morning with Jean-Paul, Maigret slowly lit his pipe, so as to appear as unthreatening as possible. He seemed to be listening distractedly to some story or other, and seeing him relaxing with an almost naive expression, the boy might have imagined that he was chatting with one of his classmates.
What did Marcel come to tell you a little while ago?
That if he were questioned again, he'd have to own up.
Why? Is he frightened?
He went to confession. I also think the funeral scared him.
He'll say he saw you at this window before going over to the one on the other side.
How did you know? You see, in this house everything goes wrong. Other people do worse things and nothing happens to them. In our house it's the exact opposite.
What were you doing at the window?
I was looking.
Was the old lady showing you the horseshoe?
Yes.
Tell me exactly what happened.
There's nothing else I can do, right?
Not at this point.
I took my rifle.
Where was your rifle?
In that corner there, near the wardrobe.
Was it loaded?
There was the slightest hesitation.
Yes.
Were the cartridges .22 longs or shorts?
Longs.
Do you usually keep the rifle in your bedroom?
Often.
Have you happened to shoot at sparrows from the window lately?
The boy paused again, thinking as fast as he could, like someone who cannot allow himself the tiniest mistake.
No, I don't think so.
Did you want to frighten the old woman?
Probably. I don't know exactly what I wanted. She was making fun of me. I thought in the end she'd tell the insurance company and that my father wouldn't be able to buy himself a new van.
That's what he decided to do with the money?
Yes. He's sure that if he had a good van and could extend his route, he would earn some money.
He isn't earning any at the moment.
He's been losing money for months, and it's my grandmother...
She's helping you.
When it's absolutely necessary. She makes a scene every time.
You fired the rifle.
He nodded with a vague, apologetic smile.
Aiming at anything?
I was aiming at the window.
In short, you wanted to break a pane of glass.
He nodded again, and asked hurriedly,
will they put me in prison?
They don't put boys your age in prison.
He seemed disappointed.
Then what will they do?
The judge will lecture you.
And after that?
He'll speak sternly to your father. He's the one in the end who's responsible.
Why, since he didn't do anything?
Where was he when you fired?
I don't know.
Was he off on his rounds?
Probably not. He never leaves that early.
Was he in the butcher shop?
Maybe.
He didn't hear anything. Your mother didn't, either.
No, they didn't say anything to me.
They don't know that you're the one who fired the shot.
I didn't tell them about it.
Who took the rifle to the shed? This time he blushed, glanced around uneasily, and would not look Maigret in the eyes. I assume, insisted the inspector, that you could not go downstairs and cross the courtyard in your cast. So?
I asked Marcel.
He stopped short.
No, that's not true,
he admitted.
It was my father. You'd find it out in the end, anyway.
Did you ask him to take down the rifle?
Yes, I didn't explain why to him.
When?
Wednesday morning.
Didn't he ask you any questions?
He just looked at me with annoyance.
He didn't mention it to your mother.
If he had, she would have come immediately to worm things out of me.
She has the habit of doing that.
She always guesses when I try to lie.
Are you the one who asked Marcel to claim that he'd seen the teacher come out of the tool shed?
No. I didn't even know he would be questioned.
Why did he do it?
Probably because he saw me at the window.
With the rifle. Were you holding the rifle? Joseph was flushed. He was making valiant efforts, trying his best not to contradict himself or appear to be hesitating. Although Maigret was speaking to him in a neutral voice without pressing him, as if he was saying nothing important, the boy was intelligent enough to realize that he was moving ever closer towards the truth.
I don't remember exactly. Maybe I hadn't already picked it up.
But when Marcel was at the other window and saw the postmistress falling, did he suspect that you had fired the shot?
He didn't tell me that.
The two of you didn't talk about it.
Not until today.
And he simply announced that if he were questioned, he'd be obliged to admit the truth.
Yes.
Was he sad?
Yes.
And you?
I'd rather get it over with.
But would you rather go to prison?
Maybe.
Why?
No reason. To see.
He did not add that prison was doubtless more fun than his parents' house. Maigret rose with a sigh. You would have let the teacher be convicted.
I don't think so.
Are you sure about that? No, Joseph was not sure about that. That he had wronged Gaston seemed not to have occurred to him. Had it occurred to the other villagers?
Are you leaving?
Asked the boy in astonishment, seeing the inspector walk towards the door. Maigret stopped at the threshold. What else would I do?
Are you going to tell the lieutenant everything?
Except, perhaps, the business about your accident.
Thank you.
He wasn't that happy about being left alone. I suppose you have nothing to add? He shook his head. You're sure that you've told me the truth? He nodded again, and then instead of opening the door, Maigret sat down on the edge of the bed. Now, tell me exactly what you saw in the courtyard.
Which courtyard?
The blood had rushed to the child's face, and his ears were crimson. Before replying, Maigret opened the door a little without having to get up, and told Marchand's wife, standing out on the landing, "Please be kind enough to go downstairs." After she'd done so, he closed the door. In this courtyard.
Our courtyard?
Yes.
What would I have seen?
I'm not the one who knows. You are. The child in his bed had drawn back to the wall and was staring wild-eyed at Maigret.
What do you mean?
You were at the window and the old lady was showing you the horseshoe.
I already told you.
Except that the rifle was not in your room.
How do you know?
Your father was downstairs in the yard with the door to the shed open. What was he doing?
Cutting up a lamb.
From his position, he could see you at your window the way he could see Leonie Bira.
No one could have told you all that,
murmured the youngster, more dazzled than stunned.
Did you simply guess?
He was on no better terms than you were with the old woman. She insulted him every time he went by on the road.
She called him a good-for-nothing and a beggar.
Did she stick her tongue out at him?
That was her favorite thing.
Did your father go into the shed?
Yes.
When he came back out, was he holding your rifle?
What will they do to him?
It depends. Have you made up your mind not to lie to me any more?
I'll tell you the truth.
Could your father still see you in the window at that moment?
I don't think so. I'd step back.
So that he wouldn't know you were watching?
Maybe. I don't remember. It happened very fast.
What happened very fast?
He took a quick look around and fired. I heard him mutter, "Take this, you old louse."
Did he aim carefully?
No. We put the gun to his shoulder and fired.
Is he a good shot?
He couldn't hit a sparrow at 10 paces.
Did he see Leonie Birard fall?
Yes. He froze for a moment, maybe completely shocked. Then he dashed into the shed to put away the rifle.
And after that?
He looked at my window and went inside the house. Then I heard him going out.
To go where?
To have a drink at Louis's place.
How do you know?
Because when he came home he was drunk.
Theo was in his garden.
He had just come out of his shed.
Did he see your father shoot?
He couldn't have from where he was.
But he saw you at the window.
I think so.
Did he hear the shot?
He must have heard it.
Your father hasn't mentioned anything since?
No.
You haven't talked to him either?
I didn't dare.
Did Marcel think you were the one who fired?
Surely.
That's why he lied.
I'm his friend.
Maigret patted him absently on the head. That's all, little fellow, he said as he stood up. He almost added, some people learn about life sooner than others. Why bother? Joseph wasn't taking the whole thing too tragically. He was so used to little daily dramas that this one in his eyes was hardly more impressive than the rest.
They're going to put him in prison?
Not for long, unless they prove that he aimed at Leonie Birard and tried to hit her.
He just wanted to scare her.
I know. Our whole village will testify in his favor.
After thinking it over, the boy agreed.
I think so. Yes. But they do like him in spite of everything. It's not his fault.
What isn't his fault?
Everything.
Maigret was halfway down the stairs when the child called down to him.
Don't you want to take off my cast?
It would be better if I sent the doctor over to you.
Will you send him over right away?
If he's at home.
Don't forget.
Finally, when Maigret reached the bottom of the stairs, he heard a murmured,
thank you.
He didn't stop at the kitchen. The sun was sinking behind the houses, and a mist was rising from the ground. The three women were still there, motionless, and silently watched him go past the window. The priest was talking with a middle-aged woman in front of the church, and the inspector thought he seemed tempted to cross the street and speak to him.
He must know, too. He knew from Marcel's confession of his lie, but he was the only one without the right to say anything.
When Maigret nodded in greeting, the priest appeared a bit surprised. Then the inspector entered the village hall, where he found Danielu waiting for him, smoking a cigar. He looked up expectantly.
You can release the teacher, said Maigret.
It's Joseph?
Maigret shook his head.
Who?
His father, Marcenat.
I assume all that's left is for me to arrest him.
I'll have a word or two with him first.
He didn't confess.
He's not in any condition to confess anything whatsoever. If you would come with me.
They both headed for the inn, but just at the door, Maigret remembered a promise he had made and went to ring at Dr. Bressel's house. The sister opened the door.
Is the doctor in?
He just left to deliver a baby.
When he returns, would you ask him to go and remove Joseph's cast? She, too, must have thought that Joseph was the culprit.
The lieutenant was waiting at Louis's door. There was no longer anyone outside. A dozen or so drinkers still lingered inside, one of them sleeping with his head on a table.
Where did they put Marcelin?
Maigret asked Thérèse. He had spoken loudly enough for Theo to hear, and it was the inspector's turn to consider the deputy mayor with an eye twinkling with mischief. Theo, moreover, was a good sport. Instead of scowling, he simply shrugged as if to say,
too bad. It's not my fault.
The room to the left of the stairs, Monsieur Maigret.
He went up alone and opened the door. Startled by the noise, the butcher sat up and looked at him with bulging eyes.
What do you want, you?
He said thickly.
What time is it?
5 o'clock. He put both feet on the floor, rubbed his eyes, his face, then looked around him for something to drink. His breath was so rank with alcohol that Maigret felt nauseated, and there were patches of vomit on the floor.
The lieutenant is waiting for you downstairs, Massler.
Me? Why, what have I done?
He'll tell you himself.
You went to my house?
Maigret did not reply.
You hassled the boy?
The butcher went on in a dull voice.
Get up, Massler.
If I feel like it.
His hair was mussed, his eyes fixed in a stare.
Well, aren't you the clever one? You must be proud of yourself. Tormenting children? That's what you came here to do. And that's the kind of work the government pays you for.
Downstairs.
Don't you dare touch me!
On his feet, swaying, he was muttering,
Always because that other fellow's a teacher. Because he's an educated man who gets taxpayers' money, too.
To emphasize his disdain, he spat on the floor, then made for the door and almost fell down the stairs.
Your pan, old Rui,
he ordered, clinging to the counter. Needing to go out with a flourish, he gazed at those around him while attempting to sneer. With a look, Louis asked Maigret whether to serve the drink, and the inspector shrugged with indifference. Marcelin downed his Pernod in one gulp, wiped his lips, turned towards Theo and cried,
Anyway, I got her, that lousy stinker!
Well, don't go around boasting about it, murmured the deputy mayor, consulting the cards in his hand.
What? You're saying I didn't get her?
You didn't do it on purpose. You couldn't hit an ox at 30 meters.
Did I get her, yes or no?
You got her fine. Now shut up.
The lieutenant stepped in. I ask you to come quietly so I won't need to use handcuffs.
And if I feel like being handcuffed?
He was showing off to the end.
As you please.
The others saw them gleam, heard them snap closed around the butcher's wrists.
You see that? All of you.
He bumped into the door frame as he left, and a few moments later, they heard a car door slam shut. There was silence. The air was steeped in wine and liquor. Thick smoke surrounded the lamp which had just been lit, despite the lingering daylight outside. In half an hour it would be completely dark, and the village would have dwindled to a few bright spots, 2 or 3 dimly lit shop windows, and the occasional shadow slipping past the houses.
"Draw up my bill," said Maigret, the first to speak.
"You're leaving right away?"
"I'm taking the evening train."
The others remained quiet, as if in suspense.
"How do I go about calling a taxi?"
"Simply ask Marchandot. He'll take you in his van. He's always the one who drives people to the station."
"Are we playing?" demanded Theo, "or not? I said spades for trumps, and here's 3 in a row."
"On what?"
"The queen."
"Good."
"I'm playing the jack."
Maigret seemed a little sad or tired, as he did almost every time he'd finished an investigation. He had come there to eat oysters washed down with a local white wine.
"What may I offer you, Inspector? My treat."
He hesitated. The odor of cheap wine was sickening. Still, because he'd so looked forward to it in Paris, he went along.
"A carafe of white."
The lights were on in the ironmonger's shop. At the back, hung with buckets and saucepans, Marcel Cellier could be glimpsed sitting before a book in the kitchen, his head in his hands.
"Cheers!"
"Cheers.
You must have a strange idea of this place, no?"
He made no reply, and shortly afterwards, Therese brought down his suitcase, which she had packed for him.
"I hope your wife will find everything in order."
And in fact it was good all of a sudden to think of Madame Maigret, of their apartment in Boulevard Richard Lenoir, and the brightly lit Grand Boulevard, where he would take her, his very first evening back, to their usual cinema. When he passed the village hall, sitting in the van's front passenger seat, there was a light in the Gaston's house. In an hour or two the teacher would return home, and the three of them, so alike one another, would be together again, as if hunkering down on a lost island. A little later, he did not notice that what was swinging back and forth in the darkness to his right were the masts of boats. And at the station, he bought a whole heap of Paris newspapers. This has been an Audible Studios production of Maigret Goes to School, written by Georges Simenon, performed by Gareth Armstrong. Production copyright 2018 by Audible Limited. Audible Studios is a division of Audible Limited.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this program.